It's the JT the Brick Show. Broadcasting live from the Finley Cadillac Performance Studio.
Raiders bring a blitz. He takes it off the middle. And he's wrapped up from behind. Max Crosby.
Your silver and black home to sound off for over 25 years.
Open at the 35. Racing to the 20. 10. Touchdown Raiders.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate. Oh, I'm fired up today. Let's go. Back from Raiders practice, I drove from the mean streets of Summerlin to deep Henderson, back to the studios of Lotus Broadcasting, and made it in time. Wow, these are early days, Bobby. I don't like getting up that early. I don't want to get up that early, but that's when Coach wants practice. He wants it at 8:30. You got to be there a little early, plenty of parking. Wow, big day today. Had another good practice where I watched practice with a bunch of smart guys, Vinny Bonsignor, Paul Gutierrez, Levi Edwards. Talked to a couple coaches today, one-on-one. And sat in an air-conditioned suite. The Raiders have a couple of air-conditioned suites out there for their season ticket holders. And the message is really heavy to everybody to get out there. They even gave me a tour of the parking lot. They built a temporary big parking lot. So you Raider fans, come early, come often, man. Pete Carroll reportedly wants more people out there. How cool is that? I didn't know what he was going to do. I had no idea if he wanted no one or he wants more people out there. So get on out here if you're a Raider fan. You're seeing all the insiders are tweeting it. Everybody's saying, get out here, fans. Go experience. And I hung out with a lot of fans today. Matter of fact, I climbed one of those circular stairs on the top of a trailer where there was a whole bunch of Raider fans that we hung out with and watched a few minutes of practice. So it was a fun day today. Really good day today. Ashton Genty spoke. Chip Kelly spoke. So we're going to play some of that here on the show and get rolling. Oh, today is our featured alumni, most influential draft picks, Nnamdi Asamoah. That's a good one. Nnamdi Asamoah, who was a great Raider. I wish he played on better Raider teams. He was a hell of a player. Made a lot of money when he left the Raiders to go to Philadelphia. But we'll go through Nnamdi and why Al Davis selected him and the memories we have of Nnamdi Asamoah. I talked to Fred Biletnikoff today. I heard Phil Villapiano on our morning show. I had a chance to talk to Rob Leonard, our defensive line coach, and we had a nice quick conversation. And everything's good. I'm really excited to be out there in Henderson for practice. And if you are out there, that's what I also would like to add to the show, is if you are at practice, call me. If you are at practice, because there's an opportunity for hundreds upon hundreds of people to be there. And I know many listen to the show on our channel. So if you go out to practice, we'd like to hear from you. As we open up the show, brought to you by Golden Entertainment, as they own the Strat, I keep reminding people to get to the Strat, to stay there for their beautiful revamped hotel rooms, to their PTs in the lobby, to their great William Hill sports book, and everything they do there. So Golden Entertainment, they own PTs and they own the Strat. And that's the most iconic feature on the Strip, is the former Stratosphere. And I'm excited about that. We're going to be doing some things coming up here during football season. So let me get going today. When I woke up this morning, and I told Bobby this story, which is interesting. I don't share enough about my personal life because I have a clock in my head. You want to hear sports. I tell you if I go to a concert's great. I tell you if I go on a road trip, my road trips are always great. I like to do that. So yesterday, I had three doubles this week where I did this show and then I do this night show that I do for Mad Dog. So in between shows, I got in the pool and I was in the pool and I was just hanging out in the pool and I was talking to my son who wasn't in the pool. And, Bobby, I got stung by a bee on the neck. And it was like one of those, wait a second, something's on my neck, you know, no big deal, and then whack. And that's the second time I got stung by a bee this summer. Never been stung by a bee in my life. Ever. Growing up playing Little League. Everything I did, swimming growing up, outdoors. Got hit twice this summer. So my wife's out of town with her sister, and I'm telling her, and she goes, you got to take the Benadryl quick. The Benadryl. Because she had some Benadryl around. I couldn't find it. I'm like, I'm okay. No. Four in the morning, I wake up. Four in the morning. And I reach behind my, if you're watching on the YouTube, I reach behind the back of my neck. And it's like the movie Elephant Man. There is a giant ball the size between a golf ball, you know, a golf ball size. It's big. And this morning at 4 in the morning, it was bigger. So then I popped the Benadryl because I found it. And then I was a little loosey-goosey this morning driving. And I'm like, man, so I need a remedy in the chat on what you do with a bee sting. I got the needle out. It was a bee. It was a bumblebee. It wasn't a yellow jacket. I pulled the thing out, and I said, man, this sucks. And that's it. So if you have a remedy in the chat on how to handle a bee sting in less than 24 hours, because, you know, there was a famous polo player who just died. He swallowed the bee and died. He was allergic to it. So I think I'm out of the woods yet, but I wanted to bring that up because it was interesting. So I got up to practice today. Had a good time out there. Mark Davis is there. Mark Davis is working the room with all the fans that are there. Max is great. He's always giving me a fist bump when he sees me, so love Max. And then I saw the starters go up, the ones go up against the ones. Remember yesterday I told you that it was a huge day. I thought Aiden O'Connell played great. You know, Gino looked good today. There are a couple. What happens in practice is a couple of good balls. There's a couple of bad balls. That's what happens. I saw Tyree Wilson do a stunt pass rush where he got to the quarterback. It would have been a sack in the game. They threw it away. It would have been a sack. Watched a lot of the young secondary. Wanted to see Darian Porter, Christopher Smith II. Wanted to watch how they're mixing and matching players. Jamal Adams was working out in the beginning of the day with the linebackers and drills. He might be a linebacker. I mean, he plays like a linebacker. I don't know what they're going to do with him. You know, because can he start? Yeah, he can start, but he's going to have to prove that he can play. He has not been a good player in this league for a while, but he has enormous talent. He's only 29 years old, but he gets hurt a lot. So he's a Pete Carroll guy, so maybe he will make it through all of this and start. Isaiah Palomal looks good to me, his size. I mean, they're not in pads today. And as Pete Carroll said yesterday, a couple of days ago when he kicked off camp, this is a long, tall, fast secondary. So what does that mean? What are they supposed to do? Well, what they're supposed to do is put their arms up and deflect the football. You know, Chris in West Oakland goes nuts because the secondary never gets interceptions. Chris has been calling me for 20 years. We don't intercept the ball. He's been right. Chris goes nuts with an interception. Like, Trayvon Merrick played, what, 4 years here? He barely gets any interceptions. Why? The safeties catch balls thrown at him. We don't for whatever reason. We might not have to intercept all these balls. Hopefully we do. We got guys who are so tall, they're going to knock it down. I mentioned Tyree Wilson. If he doesn't get to the quarterback, knock it down. Put your hands up. And we're going to get a really good interior push. The interior defensive line looks good. Jordan Meredith at center today. A lot of people tweeted that out. You know, there's a whole bunch of people to follow. But the guys who really focus, and you should follow them, Tashawn Reed, Vinny Bonsignor. Vinny's doing radio. So he's double dipping, but Tashawn Reed's been very good at practice because he's out there just watching practice aggressively for The Athletic and putting it out there. So I'm going to read some of Tashawn, what he said today. Jordan Meredith getting a lot of reps at center today for the Raiders. JPJ at practice, but Meredith is getting more work today. Jamal Adams is working with the Raiders linebackers during individual drills. I saw that and mentioned that. So he went through a couple of things that we saw, and he said Thayer Mumford, the tackle's back at practice. So the only player out is defensive tackle Christian Wilkins. So that's good news. And we tend to think Christian Wilkins is coming along for a number of reasons there. I watched some of the older linebackers play today. I have the roster here. And, again, I like having older linebackers because they're smarter. They might not be as good as they were, but they know where to line up and make plays. I'm going to dive into that with a couple of guests when we talk to coaches coming up here. You know, you have an older linebacker. If the older linebacker has still got some juice left, because Tommy Eichenberg is young and they're mixing in some new linebackers here, the older linebackers, you know where to line them up. And Patrick Graham and Pete Carroll are really good at lining up defensive players. So I think maybe the age, I don't like the age. I don't like the youth of the cornerbacks, and I don't like the overage, the elderly linebackers, in theory. But I believe that there's a method to the madness, that if they line up these older linebackers, Devin White, Landon Roberts, they line them up in the right spot, they'll do their job. The young secondary, look, I'm just telling you the conversation I had today off the record. But the young secondary, if we start off week one, we got Drake May week one, Justin Herbert week two. Those guys, as of today, if they see Darian Porter and Jakorian Bennett as the two corners, they are going to attack the hell out of them until they prove those guys can make plays. We all understand that, right? Pete Carroll is going to get those guys up to speed because if he's got to play two really young corners, really young, you know the other team's offensive coordinator. The other team's offensive coordinator is not going to say, you know, he's got to worry about Max. He's got to worry about our defensive line, Raider Nation, that's really good. And, you know, they'll understand who the personnel is, but if I was sitting in a meeting and I was going up against the Raiders and I was running the meeting, I would run the meeting on the day that the Raider prep goes in and says, they got two young kids playing corner, we're going to attack those kids and we're going to attack them all day long. That's got to be the game plan as of today. What's it going to be? We're going to run the ball against the Raiders? No, the game plan is going to be throw and attack the young corners. That's why I believe that they might bring in an older corner, an experienced corner to come in. They do have some depth and experience at the cornerback situation, but I think they're going to be good there because Pete Carroll knows how to coach that position really well. So that's what we're doing. We're talking about everything we see. We're putting on people who are there who see it and might be seeing it better than me. So with everything that we're doing, all we're looking to do is tell training camp stories here and talk about an alumni every day who was drafted by the team. Today is Nnamdi Asamoah. If you have a Nnamdi Asamoah story from Cal, how he came to the Raiders, you know, he was supposed to be a great Raider, elite. I think he was a really good Raider. He's not a top 10 draft pick of all time, but clearly worthy of a conversation here. And one of the nicest guys I've ever met. He married a movie star, TV star. He does a lot of cool things, Nnamdi, in the community. He's one of the greatest activists we've had in Raider history. So I think it's his day today, so let's get into Nnamdi a little bit later on. So when I woke up this morning off the bee sting and tried to go back to bed, the first thing I saw was all hell break loose on the internet because it looked like Justin Fields initially blew out his Achilles. He was carted off the field at Jets camp. It turns out he has a dislocated toe, which could be a big deal if you're a quarterback. A dislocated toe is a really big deal. I've known some players who had turf toe. George Atkinson, the Raider legend, told me one of the worst injuries he's ever had was a recurring turf toe. And it reportedly, so when it went out there on the internet, and you just go to Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter, those are the two guys, and Jay Glazer, friend of the show, that get it right. But it looked pretty serious because people were speculating that Justin Fields blew out his Achilles. And remember, Aaron Rodgers blew it out 2 years before. If that would have happened today, I mean, that would have been the worst story I think we've ever covered because of Aaron Rodgers' Achilles. Not that Justin Fields' Achilles wouldn't have been big, but to have two Jet quarterbacks back-to-back with that. But Fields is expected to be ready for week one against the Steelers, but carted off the field, and he has a dislocated right toe. So it's not a fracture. It's a dislocation. Aaron Glenn, speaking after practice, declined to speculate on the severity of the injury. But, man, it seemed really serious. I don't want to make light of it. But having a dislocated toe is nothing compared to having a torn Achilles. So I think for everybody, ESPN Rich Sinemi reported the downside to Fields' injury is that he'll miss training camp reps. Invaluable for him because he hasn't played with this team. But I think this is good news overall. I think they're going to be in a pretty good spot. Justin Fields is a good player. And the journeyman, Tyrod Taylor. Can you imagine if the Jets lost their quarterback today and they had to announce that Tyrod Taylor's the quarterback for the year? Sell all your tickets. And Tyrod Taylor isn't bad. But come on, he's not a starter here. And then what would have happened? I would have made this prediction today. I would have guaranteed you with my life. Savings, not my life. Derek Carr would have been the quarterback of the Jets. I said that to myself. As soon as this happened, the first thing that hit me was Derek Carr. I said, this would be perfect for Derek Carr. Derek go to New York, number two media market. Derek leads the team. They're a pretty good team because Derek's sitting out there. I don't think he's going to stay retired forever. He's too good. Derek's better than Justin Fields already. So, you know, that's not something to put in the back of your mind. I don't think it's going to happen here, but if it was an Achilles, that's how some of these quarterbacks get jobs who hold out. They wait, and then they get a job. I had someone who texted me saying, if that happened too, do you think they would call the Raiders for Aiden O'Connell to be the starter there? And I said, I don't think so. But you never know. I raved yesterday about Aiden in practice. I got a bunch of views on that. My son loves to count the views. He said, Dad, you got a lot of views on the Aiden O'Connell video. I said, the video wasn't about Aiden O'Connell. The video was Aiden O'Connell looked really good, in my opinion, yesterday. Geno throws a beautiful ball, and so does Aiden, if they have time. The toughest thing that I struggle with, this is my 28th year of going to camp, and when they're not playing in pads and they're not stopping the play and they're protecting the quarterback, you don't know if it's a good throw, but the throw never would have happened because the guy would have got sacked. So a lot of people who have been doing this a long time try to figure out, would that play have been called dead? When the ball came out and there was a good catch by Brock, Brock made a great toe touch catch on the sideline, but the way I saw it was the play would have got blown up because someone came around the edge. I think it was Kuntz, it wasn't Max, and I think they would have got to the quarterback. So we keep an eye on all that at practice. We have Levi Edwards, who's really good. Levi's really good, too. He's another guy. He doesn't really talk to anybody at practice. He watches practice, and we want to have those people here on the air and talk to them. So the Dolphins lost a cornerback yesterday with a torn ACL, and the other trending story is that Caleb Williams got yelled at by his coach in practice, and Ben Johnson. Well, Caleb Williams, I don't think he's worried about that. He's painting his fingernails different colors every day. I don't think he's going to cry when the coach yells at him, but everybody in Chicago is going nuts about that story today. Everybody's going crazy. Hulk Hogan died, and Bobby and I were talking before the show because Bobby has a big background in wrestling, is a wrestling fan his whole life. And you compared Hulk Hogan to one of the all-time greats, not only as a wrestler, but as an iconic figure of the 80s. Please explain.
Well, as I was telling you earlier, if you had a Mount Rushmore of the pop culture icons of the 80s, who would you have? Madonna.
Michael Jackson.
Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
And probably Ronald Reagan.
Very interesting you said that. It really hit home with me. You're right.
He
had a cartoon.
He did movies.
Yeah, he did everything.
And the thing to remember about Hogan, like I said before, early 80s you had Superfly. He was the big name.
Mm-hmm.
But he could only take Vince McMahon so far. McMahon wanted to go nationwide. When he hooked up with Hulk Hogan, he had the blonde hair, he had the muscles, the leg drop, all that. Mm-hmm. It gave him the gravitas to be able to take the whole thing nationwide. Next thing you know, Saturday night main event on NBC.
Yeah.
Wrestling on a major network. Yeah. That didn't happen before. He did movies. He did a cartoon series.
Yeah, he was huge. No doubt about it. His reality show was big when it came out.
Yeah.
But no doubt about it that Hulk Hogan had an impact in your life if you're a wrestling fan.
You kind of had to. I mean, I'm no Hogan fan, I will tell you. But God's honest truth, he's got to be number one on the list. Yeah, who are you going
to
pick?
And wrestling's interesting to me. I'm not a wrestling guy. I don't knock it. It's not my thing, but I understand how you could have been a fan of Stone Cold or a fan of a different wrestler at the time, Macho Man and not Hulk, but anybody who's ever supported wrestling, entertainment and sports knows that.
Absolutely.
You also said if it was a Mount Rushmore of wrestling, Hogan would be on it at number one?
He'd have to be.
And I'm
no Hogan fan, but you cannot deny that this guy took wrestling from being a local promotion thing to nationwide.
All right.
That was him.
I will take calls on Hulk Hogan today because a lot of people are suffering this week. Malcolm Jamal Warner passed away from The Cosby Show. Millions of people watched him weekly. Ozzy Osbourne passed away, which is big. Chuck Mangione today passed away. Right, he's got some great songs out there, so hopefully we can move on, and that's South Park story, not for this, for a podcast. I don't watch South Park, but everybody was telling me to watch it. I watched that. Wow. The brains behind that, but we'll save that for a podcast there. So that's what we're doing today. Namdi is our featured alumni. We want to take your call, 702-365-9200. Oh, and America's favorite sports gambler, Bill Krakenberger, is going to join us next hour. He did a video on the top five steakhouses in Vegas. And I like to do that because Vegas is getting its ass kicked now. Everybody is ripping on Vegas for gouging. I'm one of them. Not being affordable. What's going on with Vegas? All the $17 bottled water. How stupid do you have to be to buy a $17 bottle of water? You got to be an idiot to buy a bottle of water for $17. I don't care how rich you are. You got to be stupid to say that money means nothing to you to do that. And Crack had a good video about the steakhouses. I like a good steakhouse. I agreed with some of his list. I wanted to add that. And there's a movie coming out on legendary degenerate gambler Vinny Favorito, who was a legend in Vegas, a complete degenerate, stole money from a lot of people, but was a really unique comedian. And one of my good friends, former caller to this show, made the movie, Brian Burkhart. And I was supposed to go to the movie premiere on Monday, but we can't. We're getting ready to go to Canton. So Crack's in the movie, and he's going to talk about that. If you live in Vegas, this is going to be a really good movie. I think you'll like that. So we got a bunch of different ways to go, but we want to cover off on the Raiders, the rest of the NFL news as we keep going here as we open up the show. Let's start off with Raider Day in the town, Oaktown.
Hey, what's up, Brick, man? How you doing today?
I'm doing good, D. I wanted to share with you quick. Chris in West Oakland sent me a mass card for Raider Mort. Raider Mort, he went to the service and sent me a card that my wife and I really appreciated. So I put it in my library with my Raider Mort stuff. And we're still struggling that Raider Mort's gone, and I know you're struggling too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because I was there with Chris. We were there together, and like I said, they put him away, but... It was way before his time. We're going to make sure that we keep Mort in our memories throughout this season. And I miss his take and his opinion on what's going on with the Raiders now, which is what I wanted to get into, JT. You know, as a fan now, being away from it, you know, I look at it as how did we improve in the offseason? You know, did we improve at the highest level with the GM Spytek? I have friends that's coaches on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers staff. Hey, they told me that was definitely an upgrade for the Raiders. You look at head coach and you compare resumes, we've improved at the head coach. We've improved at the offensive coordinator. And we've improved, you know, on down the line. So I'm just looking forward to see what happens on Sundays, because everybody is a Super Bowl contender in the offseason, in the preseason, in training camp, which is just really for the coaches to evaluate these guys and see where they are in their development. So, but I'm liking what I see. I think we've really improved. And then keeping Graham keeps that, you know, stability on the defensive side of the ball. Pete Carroll, him being his specialty being defensive backs and safeties, man. I think, you know, he's going to keep his eye. He's going to have his touch. He's known for developing great secondaries. So I think we should be all right with that. But we, as fans, just don't get ahead of ourselves. Don't start counting Super Bowl trophies. And just know that we've improved. Now we have to see how much we've caught up with the other teams in our division that already had, you know, coaches with resumes and did better than we did last year. But I think we're going to be a lot better than what we've been in the last few years. We will be competing, as Pete say, every day just to get better, man.
Awesome. Good to hear from you, D. OG, original, old school, black hole, Raider Nation, Raider D. One of the more impactful fans that has had an impact on my life. I always tell the story, but we have a new audience, and we have a bigger audience on YouTube, when Raider D took me to the Killing Fields, and he showed me one of the roughest areas in the history of Oakland. And I'll never forget, he gave me the car tour when I came to Oakland, started with the Raiders, and said, "You want to know Oakland? Let me show you Oakland." I go, "Ooh, this is going to be interesting." And he drove me around the hood. And I'm talking the hood of the hoods, Oakland. And he took me to all these street corners and this and that and this and that and stopped by a buddy's house. I remember going in his garage, looking around. And I said to myself, man, I had no idea what the hood of Oakland was like. which was pretty intense. And Big D, I remember, he says, this is the Oakland you haven't seen. You're seeing the Oakland Coliseum. And my radio show was pumping into the hood. And he told me, man, this is Oakland. And he took me, that's the Killing Fields. And I said, ooh, I heard about that. So I go way back with Raider D. He showed me the town, the part of the town that most people don't see. And he's been a great friend ever since. We're off and running today. And we're brought to you by Modelo. Someone just said in my chat, where do I get that Raider Modelo hat? I don't know, man. I'm getting my new Modelo swag for this season coming up here. Modelo is a proud partner of our show, back with us, like most of our partners are. And Modelo is the number one beer in America. I have a bucket of Modelos on Friday. I will have a bucket of ice-cold Modelos on Friday as we get going here. Practices, I think the Raiders are off Saturday. They got a practice on Sunday. It's go time. Raiders training camp is open. They would like you to attend. So figure it out. Yeah, figure it out. Go. Just get down there because they have tremendous seating, unbelievable sight lines for you to see everything. And Max Crosby's running up and down, waving to the fans. Pete Carroll wants the fans there. I think the Raiders did a stunning job of building out the practice fields and putting up the shade and the stands and everything. It really looks good. If you're a Raider fan, make the effort and get out to Henderson.
I remember going into the draft and, yeah, maybe fifth round, maybe sixth round. I think the Titans might be interested in the fourth round, possibly. First round came around, I'm with my siblings and we're in the dorm. I had a couple of friends over and we're just watching the draft, not expecting anything. I think it was right after the 30th pick and I get a call from Al Davis saying, how would you like to be a part of the Raiders? And I'm like, wait, what? I'm like trying to figure out. We're at the end of the first round. Paul Tagliabue got up there and butchered my name.
31st selection in the 2003 NFL draft. The Oakland Raiders select Asmoga Namdi, cornerback, California.
Was he trying to say my name? And we couldn't really rejoice because it kind of took the steam out of it. But then my picture showed up and we went crazy. And then my dorm flooded with people that were watching the draft and everybody just started coming in. They were like, what? You know, going crazy because I'm at Berkeley and Oakland's 5 minutes away.
Namdi Asomugha. How does Paul Tagliabue get that wrong? Asomugha couldn't even get his first name and second name in order. That is without a doubt the worst pronunciation in the history of the NFL draft, what they did to that young man, because the commissioner should have went out to the stage with the right pronunciation. That's what I do if I'm interviewing someone. We had a guest on the other day. I said, Bobby, when he's on hold, ask for his name. How do you pronounce it? And wow, what a great player he was. So Namdi was drafted in 2003. Just heard his story. A first-round pick, 31st overall. So I was talking to someone today about this who enjoys what we do on the show, someone from the Raiders, and said that this is classic Al Davis pick. Al Davis loved this pick because he saw him play. He saw his size, right? He would be a perfect player for Pete Carroll, 6'2", 210 pounds. And Al knew that he could do a bunch of different things that he saw in person, let alone on tape. So it was a solid pick overall. The problem is, as you know, the Raiders went to the Super Bowl. And when they came off the Super Bowl, they had, you know, they're picking 31st. So they get Namdi, and then the Raiders kind of crashed for a while after that. Namdi played on some really bad teams. He played with the Raiders through 2003 to 2010. Then he went to the Eagles. He got a massive contract to go to the Eagles. Well-deserved. Very good player, but you know, I thought he was fantastic. Really good guy. One of the best people I've ever met with the silver and black. Just an overall gentleman. Now he's an actor. Played 11 years in the NFL. He played college football at Cal. A first-round pick, and he was considered one of the best shutdown corners in the NFL for a long time. 11-year career, voted All-Pro 4 times, including twice to the first team. That's hard to do. That makes him legit. And he was selected as a member of Fox Sports NFL All-Decade Team for the 2000s, 2000 through 2009. So Namdi was no joke. And when he came here, we had Charles Woodson. You remember the Woodson years, and then Charles going to Green Bay and what he was able to do. Just fantastic. And then professionally, he married Kerry Washington, who is an actress and has had tremendous success. And I guess he's more and more into acting now. But the thing about Namdi, I could go on for hours reading about what he's done for charity work. And I mean, just nuts. This guy's just incredible. And on December 26, 2013, he signed a one-day contract with Oakland so he could retire a Raider. He officially announced his retirement December 27, 2013. In 2016, Pro Football Focus named Asamoah the best Oakland Raiders player of the past decade. So Namdi Asamoah, our featured alumni today. What could have been? What could have been? I think when you look at what he was able to do and when he came to the Raiders in 03, the team just struggled. He had 8 interceptions in 2006 was his big year. But he only had 15 career interceptions. Remember, Eric Allen had 54, and he's going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Namdi, one of the better athletes the Raiders ever drafted. NorCal Raider joins us. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hey, JT. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you.
I'm really in good spirits with this offseason. You know, everything's quieted down. It seems like everything's just buttoned up. I still want them to address a little bit, linebacker. You know, we have a lot of youth, but I would like some veteran additions, even when it comes to wide receiver, just to kind of push these young guys, just to really push them, because they don't really have a lot of quality. Like Jacoby's good. You know, he's been decent, but somebody that can really show them, how the game is done. You know, somebody just to push them a little bit, because the guys we picked up, what's his name, the guy from the Patriots. I mean, they're all kind of second strings, but I would like to see somebody like an Amari Cooper, not Amari Cooper, but somebody in that regard. You know, just keep.
Why do you want this? Why do you want to? First off, Jacoby's very good. He's not good. He's very good. But I can understand there's not a Randy Moss available in his prime. There's not a Jerry Rice available, and it seems like the team is going in a direction of Jack Besh, Dante Thornton. They want to go and give Trey Tucker a really good opportunity to go there. But you could be right. I mean, there might be a good veteran wide receiver that is released around the league, and John Spytek could think he's a great fit. I don't think you're wrong. I think the Raiders are still wondering if there's a number one out there, but there's really no number ones. Amari Cooper didn't like playing here. He did not like playing here. I was there. His body language was not very good. If he comes back, we'll welcome him with open arms, but I don't know what to tell you. I think the Raiders are pretty good at receiver because Brock Bowers is a receiver, and Michael Mayer better get some targets this year, or what the hell's he doing on this roster if he doesn't catch the ball?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of guys that are improving, not a lot of stats, and in the past, we've always held on to players, hopefully they get better. Right. You know, I can go back to Darryl Osbury, guys from back in the days we've held on to for a long time. But I think we do have to make some noise, before training camp, pick up somebody, at least a veteran receiver. Hopefully somebody gets cut,
All right, I disagree with you, but thanks for the call. That's what I want to hear. I want to hear people that disagree with me. If you want a number one receiver, that ship has sailed. There's not many number one receivers. Deebo Samuel went to the Commanders. Right, you go around the league. Who's the number one receiver that's available other than a trade? George Pickens, right? The availability of him at one point. Listen, here's what everybody needs to understand, and I think I picked it up quickly. Brock Bowers needs 100 receptions every year. He can maybe get 80 and be more productive than ever. And the number for a tight end is not as important as a wide receiver. But Brock's different. So when everybody says the Raiders don't have a number one wide receiver, stop everyone in their tracks, especially the Charger fans who think Ladd McConkey is the number one receiver, and tell them, no, we have a number one receiver. His name is Brock Bowers. He's our number one guy on offense. He's number one. And I can't believe I'm about to say this because I think it's true. The only person that could overtake Brock Bowers on the Raiders is Ashton Jeanty. There is a chance that Jeanty could have a brilliant rookie year. I'm talking 1,400 yards. 1,000 yards is nothing. 100 yards a game is not important to me. It's when you get from 1,500 yards to 2,000. That'd be too much to throw at Ashton Jeanty. He could do it, but the Raiders were dead last in rushing. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you. But Jeanty is the only player on this roster that I believe that could be more productive than Brock. So if you have a really productive year out of Brock Bowers, Ashton Jeanty, and Jacoby Myers, Raiders are fine. Let's talk about stopping people on defense and getting off the field. Chip Kelly met the media today. And I left to get back here to do the show, so I want to hear it just as much as you. If you're catching some of these interviews on the app, we're going to play them here, especially to open up camp so our audience can get an understanding of the new concept of this offense.
What's up, guys?
Beautiful day.
With someone like Ashton, who's so physical, how do you balance putting him to be physical but also trying to preserve him?
Yeah, I mean, Ashton has his own unique style, you know, and I don't think we're going to ever try to coach that out of him. I think he's amazing after contact, and that's part one of his biggest strengths. So, you know, our job right now is just getting him lined up, having him understand what our offense is, what our scheme is, and then let him go. In terms of his running style, his running style, and it's gotten him this far, so we're going to continue to ride that.
Where is he in terms of pass protection and picking up, understanding
that? Again, it's... These days right now is really part of OTA still, because we still haven't had full, we have not had full pads on. I don't think we can get to do that till practice five. He when you watched him in college, you know, he's a tough, hard-nosed physical, not only as a runner, but in pass protection. We just haven't had a chance. Now, we drill it. Dylan is as good a coach as there is in terms of getting guys ready to play, but we haven't done anything where I could say, you know, I've seen it in myself, but I don't have any question that he can be really good in the pass pro game.
Definitely seen him being tapped into in the pass game, and not just on screens, but kind of downfield.
Sure.
Obviously, that was something that you guys saw on film, in college. How pleased are you with the progress that he's shown?
He's done a great job. He's a natural catcher. He played a little bit of receiver in high school when you talked to him. I think he played some slot receiver. But he catches the ball naturally. It's a natural deal for him. All Ashton is working on right now, to be honest with you, is just our terminology and just feeling really comfortable in how we call it. He played in a pro-style offense. Dirk Cutter, former head coach in the National Football League, was his offensive coordinator at Boise the last couple of years. So, you know, he's got a really good understanding. He's smart, you know, excited. You're starting to – what we want to just make sure is we just don't overwhelm him with everything, because obviously our playbook is a little bit more than a college playbook, and all NFL teams are the same way. So, but he's handled everything really, really well so far.
Jim, at this point in the offseason, what are you looking for from the offense?
It's not the offseason, so it's the season, and it's day two. I think all of us and the whole coaching staff and the players will tell you too, for 2 days, they've been sharp. You know, really, the question you always have is, they left here on June 11th and they came back for July 23rd. Where were they in the interim? You know, and you could tell that these guys worked on it, not only from a physical standpoint in terms of their conditioning and what they did coming back, but mentally, they were sharp. And we've thrown a lot at them, you know, because we came out of the spring, and when we got back here day one, they were kind of responsible for everything from the spring. So it's been a big install, and will continue to be, but it's because they can handle it. So they've been really, really sharp. They love playing, and so they're as excited. You watch their enthusiasm. It's not fake. They're excited to be out there playing football. So we're excited where they are right now, and, you know, it's really about stacking really good days on top of good days. Now, we've had two. You know, the challenge is, can we have a good walkthrough this afternoon, and can we carry that over till tomorrow?
Jim, there's a lot of expectations on the wide receiver room, and how have you seen the rookies kind of grow with this offense that encourages you about the coming season?
Yeah, and I mean, there's every wide receiver room in the league. It's a passing league, so, you know, for you to compete, you know, you got to run the ball to win games, but you got to score points, you got to throw the football. And I think, you know, we're young out there. But we have some talent, so we're only still two practices in and still in that kind of OTA mentality. You're really going to be able to tell when you get to play in the first preseason game. You get to practice against the 49ers and then get to play the Cardinals. So you're going to find out. And even as we move the following week, a week from Saturday, you know, we'll have a game in Allegiant, you know, a scrimmage in Allegiant. So but so far, so good.
Early. What has Dante Thornton shown you so far in terms of what he could add to this offense?
He just has a great skill set. You know, for someone that tall, that fast, he's got a big catch radius. He's done a really nice job, and Chris Beatty does a great job with him in terms of picking up our offense. I think he's pretty sharp. You know, I know Gino really kind of – it's comforting to Gino to know he's got that someone that fast, that tall out there, because there's a big – you know, a big body to throw to that can run and stretch a defense a little bit. So, you know, he's been really good. But I think for all these guys, as you start to get into the second week of training camp and then the preseason games is when you'll start to really be able to get an idea of where they are.
So you mentioned being able to, the guys picking up on schemes and playbook. How excited does that make you? Just like, I got guys who can absorb, retain, and execute.
It's awesome. This is such a good group to coach. Like they want to be coached. They're thirsty for knowledge. You know, when you go into the meeting room, there's a little buzz and there's an excitement. You know, it's not like, oh God, we're in camp. What are we doing here? It's like they're excited. You know, and it's special when you get an opportunity to be on an NFL roster. And I think these guys are really taking advantage of it. And it, as a coach, it makes it a blast to come in this building every day. And I think a lot of it's from the tone that Pete has set. You know, he's made football fun for these guys, this group loves playing football. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yesterday, Geno came out and said that you've been doing a good job of putting players in position to really make plays. Obviously, you have your scheme and what you want to implement, but how much goes into like really learning each player and creating schemes just for them in particular?
You know, that's a great question, and I think there's a ton involved in that, is being able to figure out what are the strengths and what are the weaknesses of each individual player, and then trying to put them in positions where they can make plays. The beauty of it is that the guy pulling the trigger can run everything, you know, so if we're with Geno and say, hey, we'd like to do this, he can do it. If you want to do that part of the game, you know, whether it be quick game, he can do it. With throwing deep ball, he can do it. Throwing the intermediate big balls, he can do that. You know, he's got so much experience, and to have a veteran quarterback there it's such a comforting feeling. And really, Aiden, who's got experience, he's not a rookie, and in his first 2 days, he's been really, really sharp. But, you know, two guys that when defenses are trying to do some things, and Pat does a great job of trying to scheme you up, show you one thing, but then give you another, and for those guys to be able to diagnose this, and they're the point guard. They're the ones that are pulling the trigger of your play. But to have those guys doing it makes it really easy.
At that point, it's about kind of figuring out what the guys are out to do. In terms of a guy like Brock, how much fun do you have in figuring out what you can do with him in this offense?
Well, that's part of it, and you learn every day. So, you know, I mean, you obviously know that he can go deep. You know, he can catch shallow routes. I learned over the summertime he can hit grand slams. So you learn more about the player every single time you're around him. So if for some reason it turns into a home run derby and we're playing anybody in the NFL, I'll take Brock. So, but he's just such a special weapon. And you ask him too, he's still learning. You know, I think Kirby did a great job at Georgia in terms of how they used him. You know, and I think you'll start to see, I think you can use him in a lot of different ways. And he's a special player. And so we're really excited about him.
Jack Bush, we've seen him kind of move around since OTAs, trying to find his role in the offense. What do you think the biggest areas of focus for him should be going into training camp?
Well, it's for all those guys. It's just really, truly understanding the offense. For a veteran, it's, you know, they're thinking about their release plan. For a rookie, they're thinking about, do I line up +2 from the hash, -1 from the hash? My route is a slant, and they haven't even recognized the defense yet. When you're an older player, that stuff's kind of second nature for him. Now it's, what's my plan? Is it press? Is it off man? How do I want to release this guy? Some of those things. So it's just him getting more comfortable in our scheme. But, a lot of college players nowadays, he played in two different systems. He was in LSU system and did a nice job in that system. And now he's played for Sonny at TCU. And so that was a different system. So he's sharp and he's picking things up. But both him, Dante, Ashton, they're still rookies. And they still have, even though they got here right after the draft, they haven't had pads on. You know, we still haven't gotten to that point, so we're still running around. And hopefully everybody looks good in this, and they do. So that's a positive.
Chip, we've seen that they are playing a little bit of guard. Jordan was playing center today.
Yeah.
Meredith. Feels like this offensive line has some versatility and some guys that can cover a lot of different positions. How good is that depth, or what do you feel about the depth so far?
Pads. Yeah. I'll go back to that one. You know, a lot of guys, I've seen guys look great, and then all of a sudden you put the pads on, and you're like, where did he go? Well, he's still here, but you just don't notice him as much anymore. But to have versatility, I think that's a real big deal. You know, Jordan can play both center and guard. JPJ can play both center and guard. You know, Thayer has played guard, can play tackle, can he swing? I think bringing in Alex Kappa was a great maneuver because it really adds a veteran that's played multiple positions. So we're going to try to sort that out. You know, the one thing about the NFL, so much different than college, is game day. You know, you're going to have either 7 or 8 guys up on game day. So whoever the 5 starters are, that's great. Those other 3 guys, you don't have 10. So you don't have a backup left tackle, backup right guard, backup left guard, backup center. You got 3 guys. and they got to be able to go no matter who goes down. So, you know, if you lose two tackles, then two of those backups technically got to go play tackle now. And the more versatile those other guys are, the better it's going to be for your depth, as especially in game.
What have you thought of Jacoby Myers thus far? You think you know, he's poised to have a big season from how his training camp has gone early on and everything?
Yeah. Well, he had a big season last year. You know, the only receiver in the NFL not to drop a ball. Such a sure-handed receiver. He can play both inside and outside. Showed up a lot today. I thought he made some really, really big plays today. I know Geno has a really good comfort level with him. But I think his versatility from, you know, similar to what we just talked about with the offensive line, his ability to play inside and outside, it really helps us. You know, if we got two tight ends in the game, can he be an outside receiver? If we don't have two tight ends in the game, you know, can he play and line up in a tight end position in the slot? And he can do it all. So he's a good weapon to have.
I know Brock can kind of move around to different positions. Does that just kind of give you a chance to express a lot of creativity on offense?
It does, and I think what you're looking for is matchups, and defense is the same way. A lot of people on defense have gone to more multiple dime linebackers, guys that were safeties that are playing linebacker. Jamal Adams is a guy that, you know, I think there's a reason they brought him in here. You know, the league is like that. It's almost a little bit, there's some positionless deals. Like, hey, just they got three or four guys that could be, he could be a tight end, he could be a receiver, he could be a receiver, he could be a running back. He could be a safety, he could be a linebacker. He could be a linebacker, he could be a defensive end. So the more versatility you have, I think it helps you, and it allows you to be more creative with the schemes that you have. All right, guys, thank you.
All right, that was Chip Kelly. I thought that was very good. He got into the depth of what this team could do on offense. Jacoby Myers, really comfortable with him. Geno and Jacoby having chemistry early. Brock Bowers. And then at the end there, he gave you a little bit of a nugget on Jamal Adams on how the league is changing, where you could play multiple positions. You could be a safety who plays linebacker. You can be a linebacker who plays defensive end. Jamal Adams is interesting to me because I don't know how good he can play at strong safety. I don't think he's great in coverage. He never was. He was great at getting to the quarterback and playing closer to the line of scrimmage. Isaiah Palamal can do that too. So that competition is going to be interesting. Jeremy Chin is a thumper, can come down and hit. So, you know, do they have a guy in the secondary who can cover? Do they have a guy that we're going to see, Darian Porter, Ja'Corian Bennett, whoever it's going to be? I got the roster here in front of me who's just flat out a guy who can cover. That means he can go after the football, knock it down, cover someone, make up speed if he gets beat. We know they can hit. We know they're oversized, they're strong, they're taller than the average safety and corner. But can they make plays? And, you know, Chip Kelly's getting paid a lot of money. He's getting paid head coach money. We all understand that, right? How generous Mark Davis is with these contracts. And he's paying the market rate. Chip Kelly's the highest paid offensive coordinator ever on a team that was dead last in rushing. Okay, you get that? That's a priority. He's going to get the running game going. And then if the running game gets going, the Raiders could be pretty dangerous because it's going to be easier for Jacoby Myers and Brock and Trey and all these guys to get open. Jack Best and Besh and Thornton. If everybody is so worried about Ashton Jeanty, I was watching with Vinny Bonsignor today, and there was a pitch play. Geno snapped it, and he pitched it out to Ashton Jeanty, and he turned the corner. And Vinny looked at me, and he goes, he got to the corner. I go, yeah, he did. He got to the corner. If that happens in real games, and on second and sixth, he's picking up first downs because he's getting around the edge, I'm going to open up the passing game for Chip Kelly. How long did we go through this three and out crap over the last couple of years? A lot. Handing it off, running it into the pile, punting, not throwing downfield, never throwing it past the marker. Third and 12 felt like third and 50. Throw it past the marker and make some plays, please.